You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Follow Up Boss, one of the leading CRMs, client relationship managers, for residential real estate. Tons of top producing agents and some of the fastest growing teams out there are using Follow Up Boss to increase lead conversion, eliminate busy work that you're not doing anyway, and frankly, deliver a higher class experience in real estate to everybody who chooses you as their realtor of choice. So if you're going to keep listening to this, which I know you will, there's more information and a personal review of Follow Up Boss. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. Hello, friends. I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today is kind of for the nerds of the world. But if you are not a nerd, you should stay tuned in for some information on some innovative insurance that's coming in flood and homeowners from Sean Harper with Ken. I'm frankly fixing to go check out his website myself. So enjoy the conversation. Go to the show notes and I'll see you on the other side. So welcome to the show. Obviously, Crazy Shit in Real Estate. We just kind of roll with whatever we want to talk about. And I'd love to hear more about you and where you're located. Give us like the tiny snapshot of who Sean Harper is.
Yeah, of course. So I've been doing online. I run Kin. I started this company 5 years ago. And we are an insurance company, or we actually manage an insurance company that our customers own, which is kind of neat.
Like a co-op insurance company?
It is. Yes, it is. There are a few other companies that are organized that way. Farmers is one, actually, that people know about. USAA is another. And it's a good model because we just get our fees, basically, which we're happy for. And the customers don't have to worry that we have an incentive not to pay a claim. So I set this up 5 years ago. We're a tech company, obviously. So we do everything. You know how much manual stuff there is in insurance. It's all been done the same way for 100 years almost, because that's how old our competitors are. So we do it all automatically with tech that we built from scratch. We do it direct to consumer, and we do it in areas where it's hard to get insurance. So we do this in places that are flood prone, hurricane prone, fire prone, which is where customers really need it. There's a lot of crazy shit that goes on there. So it's exciting. But a lot of these areas, people just can't, it's hard to get affordable insurance coverage or any. Which is a shame, because you actually like the whole thing doesn't function, right? You can't get a mortgage, you can't buy a house unless you're able to get insurance. So that's what we do. My background is a tech guy. So I've been doing financial services tech forever. My last company was a payment processing business. So we helped people running websites and restaurants and stuff like that. But after the card gets swiped or entered, it goes somewhere, right? And we were that somewhere. So we connect to the banks and get the transaction cleared, et cetera, and make sure it happened fast and at a low cost. So I sold that business like 8 years ago. I worked for the company that bought it for a little while. Then I started hatching plans for this one. What drives me is I just like making things smooth, making them automated. And if you look inside a bank or insurance company or whatever, it all can be done on a computer, right? There's no physical thing. They don't need to send you a widget. Yet, a lot of these companies are not very good at technology.
No, and they never had to be, because it's not a sexy space, right? So insurance is one of those things you have to have. You don't want to have it. You wouldn't go buy it unless there was a reason to do it, which is why I want to pull a thread there on one of the things that you kind of rambled over, which is really critical in real estate, and that's flood insurance. And we know that there's a lot of myths out there around flood insurance, one of which is that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Assistance, and the Flood Insurance Bureau, when they're working on stuff, a lot of the public thinks that there's insurance on these really swanky beachfront mansions. But the reality is flood insurance is primarily going to be necessary for Mamaw, who's in the house that she's owned forever. And the flood zones moved because FEMA moves the flood zones around. And she can't necessarily just hop up and move because she doesn't have the income for it. She doesn't have anywhere else to go. So she's got to have options. And currently, you've got Lloyd's of London, which is really expensive, and you've got the federal government. So talk to me a little bit about that flood insurance space and what you're doing to create a space where somebody could maybe just stay in the house that they're in or buy their first home. Because I should also mention that a lot of our flood zone properties are in the affordable parts of town. But if somebody can afford the flood insurance, that takes the affordable house out of their range. And when we're recording this episode at the end of 2021, there's still a dramatic lack of supply when it comes to housing. So I'm in favor of figuring out how to make stuff work that we have. So with that being said, talk to me about what you discovered in the flood insurance space and what solutions you're able to provide.
Yes, it's such an interesting topic. So one thing that's going on is you mentioned something about being in a flood zone. And the reality is like actually everywhere is a flood zone.
Thank you. If it rains where you are, it can flood. Do we learn nothing from the Bible? Hello, Superior.
You got it. You listen. And so now FEMA has the high risk zones and the low risk zones, but literally everywhere has the FEMA flood zone attached to it.
They're next to each other, right? So if I'm the line between A, E, and X, I don't know if the water knows to stop right here. It might just keep moving because water doesn't know where the zones start and stop. It's crazy.
You got it. You got it. That's exactly it.
Not technology driven, right? I just crazy talk.
Just common sense, right? It's common sense. The places that are not in the FEMA high risk zone still can flood. In the same way that if your house is not a high risk house for burning down, it still could burn down, right? Like these things do happen. And in fact, 70% of all flooding damage happens in areas that are not designated high risk by FEMA. So
we saw that after Hurricane Harvey in Houston. I think the number there was even more dramatic. It was 80% of the affected properties weren't in a FEMA flood zone, but they sure flooded out.
You got it. It happens all over the place. And even in places not near the ocean, you know, it happens all over the Midwest too. You saw a lot of it with Hurricane Ida, right? Like everyone knows about the impact it had in Louisiana. But then you go up to Pennsylvania, New York, these areas were all flooding. And a lot of people don't have. So unfortunately, people are not great about buying insurance, right? You talked, it's not sexy. No one wants to have to pay for it. So usually we're just doing what the mortgage bank tells us to do. Now, the mortgage companies, for whatever reason, don't require you to have flood insurance if you're not in a high-risk zone. And it's not covered in a homeowner's policy, which makes no sense, by the way. It should be covered in a homeowner's policy.
Well, they should get a waiver signed that says we offered this to you. That kind of drives me crazy that so much of the public, if they don't have a realtor who understands or an insurance agent who's going to recommend it, that they're not looking at every available avenue and every available outcome because, oh my gosh, this is so much money we're dealing with. And it's where you sleep, it's your health, because if the water gets in the house, anyway.
It's not good. So really everybody should have flood insurance. So FEMA, I think, is messed up in a couple of ways. The first is by giving people this idea that if you're not in a high-risk zone, you could never get flooded. And that's obviously not true. It's 70% of all flooding happens. A lot of the times insurance coverage in those areas is pretty cheap. You might be able to add flood insurance for $100 a year or something like that. And now your home's not likely to flood, but that's why you buy insurance. It's for stuff that's not likely, but if it happened, it would be really, really bad. So that's one thing I think that's not great. The other thing is those flood zones are not very granular. So, you know, just if you know the neighborhood, you'll see places that are in the flood zone that probably aren't going to flood. And you'll see places right next door to the flood zone. Well, actually, they look pretty likely to flood, right? Maybe they flooded before. And what's going on there is that it's not granular enough. And actually, every house is different. Every house has different elevation. The water around the house is different. It's not uncommon that you'd have one house on the block that floods all the time, and one house on the block that doesn't. And that's just because it's complicated what causes water to flow one way versus another. And so by painting this really broad brush, they're losing a lot of this granularity. So a private company like ours, you know, we come in and we use a lot of additional data sources and we're looking at it on a much more granular basis. And we're actually able to say, this house has specific risk. We're not grouping together the whole neighborhood or, you know, the whole area. And you can actually have different price basically for the insurance for each of those. So FEMA is moving in that direction with this whole, and it gets really tied up in this whole repricing of the and redrawing of the flood zones. Which brings me to the next thing, which is they don't do it often enough.
Right, because we just now got 2.0 and we've been working on that for decades, but I'm grateful for the improvement. But if you have a giant flood zone, but somebody's sitting on top of a hill, it's like you just said, the topo maps will tell you more than the FEMA maps do. So I'm curious, are topological maps, topographical maps, one of the things that you have as your data sources? Because as a realtor, before I go show a house, I'm going to pull the topo map so I can see what the rise and fall is.
That's really smart. That's exactly what companies like ours are doing in a more quantitative ways. We're looking at the specific elevation, and not even the specific elevation necessarily where the mailbox is, but property obviously can have different elevations across it, right? You might have one side of the property that's significantly lower than the other side, but that might not be a big deal if it's just in your yard. Like yard floods, it's okay. But if it's where your home is at a lower elevation, that can actually be a really big problem. So that's exactly what's going into it. And so what FEMA is doing, they're trying to make the flood pricing more accurate, and they should, right? Because right now they're losing a ton of money, and that's obviously not sustainable. And the maps are obviously wrong, as you pointed out, in some cases. So they have to get more granular. The prices are going to have to go up on some people, because this is like just the reality of the world that we live in.
I think we all agree if the house is on the river and water comes in every 3 years, their insurance should be higher, but they should have something so they can stay put if they can't afford to move. By that same token, the pricing should be different for the house that's four streets inland that still shows the zone, but is up the rise a little bit. I mean, I love that you're pointing this out, that it should be property by property, which is what we mean by granular. Those of y'all that aren't super nerdy space, is how far you drive down into the data points. So how did you land in figuring this out? Was it because you were in a house that had an issue, or is this just you being a super nerd who was said, where is their metadata that's not being drilled down to the best impact?
It's really the latter. Like, I don't have
a nerd. You should acknowledge that now. The world says nerds are good.
You got it. We like to figure out where things are mispriced, because usually that creates an opportunity. So you just look at the way the industry does it, look at how it should be done, right? Just like logically, how would you try to calculate the right probability of house flooding? Like, it's very difficult, right, to get all of the data in and pull it and establish the correlations and be able to do this automatically, but it's not rocket science. Like, it's actually just sort of the programmatic application of common sense and historical data, because we know where places have flooded, right? It's a pretty simple relationship. If you have a big database of places that have flooded and you have a lot of data, you have a big database about the traits of the property, it's hard, but it's not, I don't know, it's kind of obvious, right? Like, right, you can figure out what the relationship between the two things is.
Okay, so I told y'all that I would do a review of Follow Up Boss, you know, because I'm your friend in real estate, and I did. Now, you know, there's a Blue Million CRM out there. I mean, if you go to any Facebook group, every realtor's like, which one should I use? Which one should I use? And you know that these CRM, which are client relationship managers or customer relationship manager, whatever you want to call it, it's truly a system that's just designed to help you know what to do next, because you're very busy and you're a multitasker in real estate. With all those different tasks and balls up in the air, you need something to help you stay on track. And that's what Follow Up Boss does. Now, when you save a name and a phone number in there, that is basically a Rolodex. Follow Up Boss is going to take the names and phone numbers and also help you know what to do next, so you can maintain these relationships with your neighbors, because that's what this is about. Real estate is not about serving just prospects and clients. It's about taking great care of your neighbors' needs in real estate. And if you'll use a tool like Follow Up Boss, where they remember you, oh, they might even call you when they're ready to buy or sell again, or when their mom and daddy do, or their best friend or their kid, and you want to be top of mind. That's what a product like Follow Up Boss will do for you. Truly, it's going to change your business when you start paying better attention to people. They don't have to know you use Follow Up Boss, but they'll totally understand that they are being heard by you. So now there's a free trial for my people, because you're loved. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. No credit card is required. And frankly, because you're my people and we made an ask for you, Follow Up Boss said, yes, you get double the free trial. That's actually enough time to log in, put some pieces in it, and watch it change your business as it has for so many realtors and teams nationwide. Again, go to followupboss.com/crazy to start your free trial today. And instead of talking in terms of these 500-year floodplains, which crack me up because we don't have data going back that far, we could totally look at the last 50 years and spot some trend lines. I mean, it's not perfect, but nothing in trend spotting is perfect, but you can definitely do predictive analysis that that's what the technology's for, right? That's what we have, these supercomputers and machines that weren't around when you and I were kids that can calculate everything. It's fascinating that we actually don't use it more often. It's used more by our tech oligarchs to spy on us than we're using it in day-to-day actual useful life, right? I mean, I would rather have the technology give us a more accurate price on and risk factor on a flood factor of a property than it to tell me what kind of shoes I should buy from Amazon. That to me is kind of a frivolous use of technology. And we've got direct health and financial impacts that can come from technology, which is what you're doing. So looking at where you landed in the data, what's been the most fascinating thing you've discovered in doing your deep dives? Where were you saying, oh, snap, nobody in the insurance world has noticed X or Y?
Yeah. So the thing is, it actually ends up being, because you have these, we have thousands of variables that go into pricing every risk. And we're pricing it for flood likelihood, but we're also pricing it for wind likelihood and, you know, the likelihood of other things happening. And the thing that always surprises me is just how, so if you look at the way the traditional industry does it, a traditional private insurance company is working on maybe 40 fields of data. It's all self-reported, or a lot of it is, right? The agent is reporting it or the user is reporting it. And you'll see it, like for flood insurance is a good example. The FEMA flood application is like pages and pages long. It's a giant hassle to fill out. And I think a lot of the times, not a lot of care is being put into that. And also, we're all human, right? So if you're filling it out, it's kind of like if you applied for a credit card and they asked you, do you usually pay your bills on time? Well, what are you going to say? You'd be like, yeah, of course I do. Even if you don't, right? So this is, you end up with this moral hazard issue where people will fudge the data if they know the answer. Sometimes they don't. They'll just assume the best, right? Like, what type of roof is this? Oh, it's that type. It's got to be safer, right? I don't know. And so you have a lot of these surprises that come up because the industry has been relying on the small amount of data that's all self-reported. And there's like, it's directionally accurate, right? But it's all these edge cases where like somebody didn't know or somebody fibs or whatever. And what you can do if you have thousands of fields of data, it's all coming from objective sources. Like we use a lot of aerial images. Well, you run the aerial image through a machine learning algorithm, you can tell a lot of stuff about the house. But you can tell if there's a pool and what shape the roof is and what the elevation is. And if there's trees over the home, like if there's water nearby, there's all this stuff you can tell, right? Just from having a machine look at it at massive, massive scale. And it performs a lot better when you do that, obviously. It's not always in intuitive ways. Like you were asking me this sort of intuitive question. And sometimes it's a very complicated relationship that might have four or five different sort of interplays. And you don't really understand the full picture unless you have this massive, massive amount of data. And that's one thing, like you talked about, like Amazon and Netflix and stuff. There's all this data crunching to like figure out predictive things about people, like what kind of shoes they want. But it is the same like infrastructure, the same tech infrastructure, the same programmatic techniques, the same, you know, application of data. We're just applying it to a different problem, more practical problem that I think is more important thing for the world. You can live without the pair of shoes. You can't live without a mortgage. You can't live without insurance to cover your home. So that's sort of, that's what gets me fired up. It's just the ability to get better and better at this as you get more and more data.
And it kind of makes me wish that anybody, any homeowner could look at those thousands of data points about their house. Because one thing that does drive me crazy as a realtor, and all my realtor friends out there will agree, we'll go to see somebody's home. They're thinking about selling it. Great. How old's the roof? I don't know. Well, we've been in the house 30 years. What? When did you replace the roof? I don't know. I think it's when we were pregnant with this kid. Like they have no idea because they're not tracking their own data points because life gets in the way. And when life gets in the way and they start answering questions, it goes back to GEICO, you know, garbage in, garbage out. But if you have 1,000 data points created by that Google Map drone, Google Earth thing that already saw your house, then you've actually got information that you could use to protect and preserve your investment and also your family's health and well-being. So I kind of rambled down that hole because I'm obviously somebody who pays attention to flood insurance and what happens on the federal level. And I'm so excited whenever there's another option for the consumer public because a competitive marketplace creates a better environment all around and also would help dig us out of some of that money pit that DC continues to put a shovel to every single day. So anyway, of course, the show is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Did you have a story you wanted to tell us about something crazy you've observed in and around houses or real estate or insurance as comes to this process, or a data point that stuck out at you at some point? My audience is always looking for something that'll make them say, "What?" And so I'm curious what you have.
Yeah. So probably the craziest one is related to what we were talking about earlier, is that the average age of a top 10 property insurance company in the US is 107.
The average.
That's the average.
How do they last so long? They're not doing mergers and acquisitions. They're not getting busted up as monopolies. They're just hanging out forever.
Yeah. So this is the thing. Like, you're talking about the free market and capitalism and how it works. And capitalism works best when there's free entry and exit, when new companies can come in, and when old companies really have to fight to be better day to day, or they die. And insurance is just one of those industries where it's very, very hard to enter. So you don't have a lot of competitive intensity. And believe it or not, the average age of a top 10 property insurance company in the US is 107 years old. It's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, that's like the opposite of real estate, because on our side, we have the lowest barriers to entry, the most competitive market. A new company can spring up and take over market share, lickety split, if they've got a value prop and some benefits to offer. I'm just like, whoa, because a 107-year-old company in the real estate side wouldn't even be a monolith. It's got all these individual agents in it doing things their own way. But we've got so much youth on our side, that's just jaw-dropping to me. But then you think about actuarial tables and premium writing and how long you're with your customers and how much risk an insurance company takes. In the long term, it's an entirely different product, obviously. So how has it been for you being the young guy in the old folks' home?
It's, in some ways, it's easy because we're able to go, we've been able to recruit amazing people from the insurance industry. And one thing you'll find is if you go into some of these big insurance companies, just hang out, you find all these really smart people and they're all pretty frustrated because they're stuck in an organization that's not really able to change quickly. And really, most importantly, where the technology stops them from doing it. Because a lot of these companies run on really, really old technology. So we're like, cool, hey, come over here. Like, you can, Mr. Actuary Insurance Nerd Guy, you can sit right over here next to the tech nerds, and they'll make you all the cool stuff, all the cool math stuff you want, right? And they love it. So in that way, it's pretty easy because on a day-to-day basis, we're able to move so much faster than our legacy competitors. Now, on the other hand, it's really hard because this is a hard industry to enter. Like, it actually took us 3 years and let's call it $60 million. Yeah. So you really launched the business in its current form.
$60 million? Like, 60 million. With 8 digits?
Yeah.
I don't ever want to hear a realtor fuss ever again about the $2,000 you spent on pre-licensing and joining the association. $60 million.
And it's rough, right? Because you're like, hey, guys.
That red tape you had to hurdle, was that bureaucratic things? Was that licensure in different states?
We waited to get licensed. We were setting up this. I was telling you about the way we're structured, right? We're sort of not, you know, we operate a nonprofit on behalf of our customers. It took us from the day we applied for that to the day that we were able to write our first policy, it took us a year.
That's crazy.
And that's fast. People in the industry are like, wow, you got that done in a year? That's incredible. I'm like, well, okay. Like, I thought it was pretty frustrating, right? Because we're sitting there, you know, the clock is ticking. You know,
investors are watching.
Investors are watching. They're like, hey, when are we ever going to get a return on this? Like, we don't even know if this is going to work. You haven't written one policy yet. You put all this money in. So it's just a very hard industry to enter.
But aren't you glad you got into it so you can create something new and exciting in a space that needed new and exciting?
It's awesome, honestly. It's really fun. And we're doing business, we talked about. We're in places where people don't have a lot of good options. And it's just not realistic. Especially when we started this, there was a lot of talk. A lot of people said, believe it or not, this is insane. If we go to an investor in San Francisco or New York, and they'd say, I don't know, with global warming, is anyone even going to live in Florida anymore?
You look at 2021, everybody's going to Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Now you don't get that question anymore because all those same guys from California are moving to Florida, Texas. So
I mean, we got to take care of the environment, but we also got to acknowledge that a lot of what's going on is designed to put power into elite hands. And we know this.
We have to take care of the environment, absolutely. And we also have to adapt to its changes, right? So if you're doing the same thing you've been doing it for 100 years, you're not able to adapt and things change from one year to the next, and things are changing faster than they ever have before, right? The way we build cities is changing. The technology we have is changing. Consumer preferences is changing. The weather's changing. And so you have to be able to respond to these things, or you're just sort of sunk.
So if somebody were going to reach out to your company, knowing that you're a technology focus, do they talk to a human, or is everything just app and website run? Because I will say that in the space we're talking about, a lot of the clients that I have, say they're moving from California to North Carolina, it's an entirely different ballgame. They want to talk to a human. So have you crossed that bridge with the intersection of human voices and technology so you can serve better?
Yeah, so we do have people. And this is the thing. Homeowners insurance is complicated. And a lot of our customers will go through, they'll enter their address, they'll get through the process. And at some point, they get stuck and they're like, hey, I don't know, like I could use some advice on this, or how does this compare to my other options, my other coverages, et cetera. I didn't know what this term means. So, you know, we do have a human contact center and people really love it. Like if you go and check out our online reviews, people will talk about our tech. They'll talk about our low prices, but they'll actually mention the customer service person they talk to by name. They'll say, Kim was great. It was cheap. It was easy, but I loved Kimberly because she was so helpful and she was so expert. So these guys are they're all licensed. They all have their insurance license. They're armed with a lot of technology. So they don't spend any of their day doing silly paper shuffling that a traditional insurance agent might do. And so all they have to do all day is just help customers and give them advice and, you know, help make their lives a little bit easier. So yeah, you can talk to people if you use Kim.
Which I think those are going to wind up being all of our favorite companies in a future of customer service where you get that intersection of smart technology, pricing that you can defend, whether it's low or medium or high. I'm cool as long as you can defend what's going on here because I need that person on the other side to treat me like my business matters. So, Sean, if somebody wants to reach out to Ken and find out about pricing and availability in their market, or maybe they're an independent insurance broker, can they reach out to you about Ken being in their portfolio too?
Yeah. So we don't work with independent insurance brokers. That's part of what we do is we sell direct to the customer, you know, with our internal agents. But if a customer is interested or, you know, anyone else, we're at kin.com. It's kin like family, kin.com. And we're on Twitter and Instagram and email and all the normal places too. But you can find all those at the website.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some insights into some, well, I know it's not exciting to everybody, but it's exciting to me when there's improvements to flood insurance. And so I'm a real estate nerd. You're an insurance nerd. But thank you for pouring into this space and giving us some background and information. And make sure you guys pay attention. All of the links and all the contact are in the show notes for this episode. If you're just not sure of what he said, you like to click, it's all right there. So go check him out, follow them online, and give us a comment back. I want to know what you find out when you go pull a quote for yourself, because I know y'all, you're going to go check it out, and I'm curious to hear what your experience is. Sean, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate your time and your information.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. It was fun.
All right, guys, you know what to do next. Share this episode with somebody that needs to hear about it. Give us 5 stars because that's the nice thing to do. Leave a comment for Sean and tell him you appreciate his perseverance and his $60 million. And most importantly, come back and see us where this show is going to have something different for you every time. And I'll see you then. Okay, now don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.